everyone, and welcome to Dallas Hoops Fancast. I'm your host, Sydney, and I'm here with my co-host, Martin.
Hey, guys.
Welcome to the show. We are on the internet at DallasHoopsCast.com. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, a five-star rating would be so much appreciated. If you're listening on YouTube, make sure you're subscribed and join the conversation in the comments. I enjoy reading those and responding to them. Speaking of the website, I just published a new article answering the question of whether or not Luka can actually win MVP this season. And it wasn't just my opinion. I actually dug into the history of players who have won MVP. I looked at their average MVP, what the average MVP season was like, and then I shared my conclusion. We're going to talk a bit about that in this episode, but I encourage you to read the article as well. And I also just launched, or we launched.
Okay.
Because we did all right. This together.
Yes.
Not
offended.
I just launched a super cool new tool on the site. It's an interactive MVP dashboard, so you can view stats and data for all of the past MVPs. You can segment them by position, age, team, win rate, all of that. And it's completely interactive, so I think that you'll have a lot of fun with it. Just go to DallasHoopsCast.com and click on MVP dashboard in the top menu. Okay, that wasn't too long.
No,
that was,
good. Yeah.
We're not done yet, though.
Okay.
We're going to get started by talking about the entire past week of games. We'll go into the good, the bad, and the ugly like we always do. And then before we get to our weekly game predictions, we're going to have an interview with Evan Zoucha from Premium Hoops. We talk about players like Luka Doncic who have exceptional feel for the game and high basketball IQ, and basically dive into what that means. Like, what is feel? How do you quantify it? Why is Luka so much more advanced in that area than other players his age? Super interesting. So it's a good episode all around. Before we do that, I want to thank our sponsor for this show. Thank you for sponsoring this show.
Thank you.
Thank you. You've been a great sponsor. I didn't have one.
Yeah, we should start thinking about that before we start thanking them.
Okay. Well, no, we do have one.
How about we thank Samson?
Samson for the microphone stands?
Yes.
Even though we paid for them?
No, they sponsored them. We did pay, okay. But they were like, you can use ours
If you buy them.
Yes.
Thank you, Samson, for letting us buy your microphone boom arm stand things. Okay. So let's get started with the good, the bad, and the ugly of this past week of games. They just lost today to the Bulls. Before that, they lost to the Bucks. And before that, they had a pretty good win against the Charlotte Hornets. And we'll start with the good. I think, obviously, the big plus this week was their defense. The team defense has improved dramatically. After this Bulls loss, their fourth in defensive rating. There was a point where they were second in the league mm-hmm. in defensive rating. It's just, it's picked up a whole lot. And that, like, even in the losses, their defense yeah. has been so much better.
Well, I think you saw in the Bucks game, even though the Bucks average 120 points a game, so you held them under their total points per game.
Their average yeah.
at 112. And there were some times where you were playing, your defense kept you in the game. Because yeah. offensively, throughout stretches of the game, they struggled to score. The same with the Hornets. The Mavericks' offense, for an odd reason, is they're going through these patches, these long patches of mm-hmm. time where they can't buy a bucket. Now, a yeah. lot of that might have to do with the fact that they have 22 guys out right now. But defensively, it's yeah. been keeping them in the games. And you saw against the Bulls, they didn't have that same defensive intensity. Of course, you're also playing two rookies extended True. Period of time.
You had another guy out, Hardaway.
Yeah, yeah. Let's hope he's actually... I mean, I don't want to hope that he's hurt, but yeah. let's hope he didn't rest on the first night of a back-to-back. Because, you know, 29 is super old, and he needs that rest.
Yeah, I think even against the Bucks when they lost, mm-hmm. their resilience that whole game, I really liked it. And then obviously there were some things that happened at the end that caused them to lose. But to me, that was like a normal NBA loss. They played mm-hmm. great defense. They were resilient. And then it just didn't go their way at the end. And sometimes that happens.
Yeah.
But I was really impressed by the fact that they kept fighting in that game and their defense, too.
Yeah, those kind of losses are going to happen against good yeah. teams. You can't expect to go to Milwaukee and beat them on their home court on a regular basis. So,
every game.
I mean, it's
was that whatever you want to call it, mistake or whatever, was it preventable? Sure. But sometimes that happens in a game, and that's why you lose some games. It's a normal loss.
I don't even think that. I thought the reason they lost the game is Chris Middleton came down, hit two tough back-to-back threes with a hand in his face, and that decided the game. If he misses one of those, I think the Mavericks win that game because they were really kind of taken over there late in the game. Luka was doing MVP stuff.
Yeah.
But Middleton was like, hey, if I don't make a shot, we're going to lose.
Yeah.
And he came down and made two of them in a row. That was the deciding factor. And that's what wins or loses games for you, is making shots at the end of them. And the Mavericks just happened to miss.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think their defense and the resilience that they've shown. And I don't know if it's, if like, will that change at all once all these guys come back? Because they've been using lineups that they don't usually use. So
yeah,
we'll see. But
they were good defensively. That's why they changed the starting lineup.
Oh yeah, true.
Because they weren't good defensively, and then they put Josh Richardson and Kleba and Dorian.
How about we play good defensive players?
And we'll be good defensively.
It's a miracle. Yeah. So that's good. And then Luka too. Like, his defense in these games, I mean, he's putting forth so much more effort. He's making plays. I mean, we've seen the number of steals he's had and the number of blocks he's had. He's just been much better one-on-one defensively and then making those big plays. Yeah.
The only concern I have with that is he is such a high usage rate player on the offensive end of the court. He's by far leading the league in usage rate. At some point, you know, does he get gassed playing that hard on defense that consistently? It, you know, and then trying to also carry the load offensively. I don't know if anybody could endure that.
Well, that was my next question. Like, is he going to be able to keep this up? Like, does he, I don't know, does he want to keep it up, or can he keep it up?
I don't think you.
Or do you want him to keep it
up? No, like, for me, it's not a matter, like, you don't want to have Luka do that every single minute of every single game. You want it to happen when it needs to happen, in a big game, late in a game. That's when you want him to have that ability to turn it on defensively. But because he carries such a load offensively, I would be concerned to have him play that hard on the defensive end of the court every single game. That's just, you know, your offense would suffer too much, in my opinion. And really, it has suffered a lot already this year.
Yeah, true. So, I mean, like, I've been impressed with it, but I agree with you. I don't know if I even want him to keep this up. And, like, I don't know. I mean, there's some guys like a LeBron James who can do it on both ends of the court. So it's not like it's impossible.
But that's debatable, because there is plenty of footage out there of LeBron just kind of standing out there defensively.
True.
He doesn't always play lockdown defense. When he's playing the New York Knicks, you think LeBron's out there catching his guy, you know, half court pressure and all that. No, it's when it matters, he plays good defense. And I think that's what you expect from Luka.
And also, like, I don't know, do you think this would play any sort of role into his MVP candidacy?
Well, yeah.
If he would play defense like this.
Yeah, obviously it would help. I don't think they care. I mean, normally MVP winners, they don't even look at what they do defensively. I know Giannis has won it, but Giannis would have won it just from his offensive numbers alone, because of what he was doing on the offensive side of the court. It will help, but are we going to have that discussion about, do we think Luka's going to win MVP?
No, that's later
on. Okay, all right.
One last thing, just of the good, like, Luka has been playing like an MVP in these past three games. He had 34 points, 28 points, 36 points. Today he set, like, multiple records for 30-point triple-doubles and getting it within three quarters and triple-doubles overall. He broke Michael Jordan's record. I mean, he's just been absolutely amazing.
Starting to get bored with all these records he's breaking, you know.
Yeah.
It's not even a topic anymore.
I mean, I wish that they were actually winning, but
it's tough, you know.
And we're going to talk about that. That's, I guess we can use that to kind of slide into the bad, which is just, you know, having all these players out at a really bad time. I mean, January, even with everything that Luka is doing, because they have so many players out and they have this tough schedule, it hasn't really led to wins. Like, on the site before the season started, I posted a breakdown of the first half of their schedule. And I said that January would be the toughest month because they have 10 road games, 4 back-to-backs, and 2 3-game road trips. And it's just the worst time for like all these 28 billion players to be out for the Mavs.
I mean, it's bad and ugly. I mean, we can combine our, yeah, our bad and ugly.
It is kinda, because it's the bad and the ugly.
The schedule is tough. I mean, they have tomorrow against Toronto, and I don't expect Porzingis, obviously, to play. I would say you may even think Luka might sit out with the amount of minutes he played tonight. But then they go on the road to Indiana. Tough, tough team to beat.
I mean, without Oladipo, you know,
well, but still, there's, you're on the road against a really good team, and then you go on the road to San Antonio, who is, they're not great, but they're better. But that's a back-to-back because the next night you play Houston.
Yeah.
And then...
Who it, now has Oladipo. Yes.
And then you have Denver.
Yeah.
And then,
and
I
then
mean...
And then Utah. You have a road back-to-back against Utah. You play them twice in a row.
It's ridiculous. The schedule that they have in January, and to be out six guys, they were out today against the Bulls. It's just really bad timing. And then Porzingis is not Porzingis yet because he's just coming back from injury. You can't expect him to go out there and just be a 30-point guy every night after missing that much time. So it's tough. I mean, it's bad timing with the COVID stuff, and it's a really tough schedule. I don't know how the Mavs – I mean, this month may determine ultimately where they're going to end up finishing in the, you know, in the Western Conference. Yeah, in the standings by the end of the season.
I do actually want to talk about Kristaps a little bit. I know beforehand we talked about how we wanted to be careful with it because I don't want to, like you said, it's his third game back. And so I think it's kind of hard and unfair to evaluate him as a player this early. But I think that's kind of what I want to say. Like, that's kind of what I want to talk about is how, like, I know that he's struggling and his shots aren't going in, and all of this seems to be compounding because they're losing. But also, it's his third game back from a torn meniscus and having surgery on his knee for the second time, where in the previous season, he was coming back from a torn ACL and just started to find his rhythm in August when he then got injured. Like, he's not going to be good for a while. And I know that it sounds, all of that sounds bad that we have to wait again for him to be good. But to me, I don't think that's an indictment on him. I think it's because he had back-to-back knee injuries and he's coming back from it. It's just, it would take anybody a while to be good again or to be themselves again.
Well, yes, but that doesn't mean it doesn't hurt the Mavericks as a team.
Exactly.
You know, like,
I know it sucks.
You're counting on Porzingis to be
the unicorn.
A guy that everybody thinks he has the potential to be a franchise player. You know, obviously he's not as good as Luka. But he has the chance to be a really high-end all-star in this league.
Mm-hmm.
And for this roster, you need that.
Yeah.
You need him to be top-level guy in order for you to move in the standings and to go deep in the playoffs. Now, they're not going to win the championship this year because they just don't have enough good players outside of those two. But you can perhaps go to the second round and maybe fight really hard in that second round and take it to a 6 or 7 game series or whoever you play in that second round. But without him being at that top level, it's really hurting the Mavericks. And it's not fair to Porzingis because he can't control it. But it's also not fair to the Mavericks, you know,
because it's a sucky situation.
It is,
basically.
Yeah.
And it's true, like he is their, he's their second guy. They got him to be their second guy, and they have, I think, delayed putting off any major roster moves in order to keep him as their second guy. And whatever happens in the future, I don't know. But they've clearly made that commitment to have Luka be the player A and Kristaps is player B. And so while he's either not playing or out there not playing well, like, yeah, it sucks a lot. But I think it's, I don't know, I just think he's going to suck for a while because he came back from two major knee injuries.
Yeah.
And that sucks.
Well, and it's just, you know, can you emotionally accept that and not want him gone?
Yeah.
Or can you, you know, I don't know. It's just, you need him to be that guy.
Yeah.
And he's not going to be.
Here's a good question. Do you think that he should be playing differently given the fact that he is struggling? Or is it just a matter of, time? Just let him play.
I don't know if he's ever quite felt comfortable in this offense. And I know people will say, well, you know, the 30-point triple, the 30-point double-double he had in the bubble. It was a handful of games. And you know what? He looked good. But the Mavericks were 2-6. So it's not like they ran through the teams in the bubble when both him and Luka were averaging 30 points and 10 rebounds. They still were losing games. So there's still something missing with that.
But do you think, is that an indictment on Kristaps, or is that an indictment on the roster just not being good? Like, you have two guys that are playing like all-stars and you still go 2-6. Does that mean the... And then also, I mean, you do have to consider the fact that they were taking it to the Clippers once the playoffs started.
Yes, but then the Clippers got eliminated in the second round, so perhaps the Clippers weren't as good as we thought they were going to be.
Yeah.
And not to take anything away from what the Mavericks did, but it's not like the Clippers went and won the championship.
True.
You know, they got eliminated in the next round.
Okay, then going back to my previous question, like, is that... Does that say something about Luke and KP, or is that more just about that roster wasn't as good as we thought it was?
Well, it's not. The roster's not... Carlisle makes the team better than what it is based on his system and putting players, but the players aren't as good as we all want them to be.
Yeah.
But I think it's a big question mark. I don't think you've seen enough of top-notch Porzingis and top-notch Luka to have any clue what you're supposed to do
and
with this roster.
And top-notch Luka-KP duo.
At the same time. Yeah. You got 8 games of it.
Yeah.
Essentially in the bubble and a couple in the playoffs. But I just don't think you've seen enough. I don't know if they really know what to do with these two.
Well, and then with all these players being out, like, you have Willie Cauley-Stein and KP starting, and I don't think that's ideal. And we're back to this debate of KP at the 4 or the 5, and I think that's because of these players being out, so we still don't get to really see them.
Like, I'm surprised that they're doing the Cauley-Stein KP. I think it was more of a favor to Cauley-Stein because he had so played hard, well, and the advanced numbers showed that he had a high net rating when he was out there.
And he had a high defensive rating, too.
And so it wasn't 100% fair to him to just immediately put him to the bench on Porzingis' first game back. But I think ultimately, and I could be wrong, I didn't think we would ever see this lineup to begin with, but ultimately I think Porzingis is the 5 and Maxey's the 4.
Yeah.
And I think you have to determine if that's going to work.
Yeah. And I mean, what sucks is, like, you can't try that because all these players are out. Yeah.
We probably won't know anything about this team until March.
Yeah,
because you're going to have this month is going to be brutal. Mm-hmm. And then you have February to finally get things together. And then we'll see what you have after that, pending any further COVID tests.
Yeah, well, that's what I was about to say. That's assuming no one else tests positive or gets injured or whatever.
And the Mavs have been one of the worst teams right now with the COVID bug.
Yeah.
Like, it's worse than what they're in right now is worse than what the Suns or the Wizards are, where their games are getting postponed. Because they don't have to worry about losing these games.
Yeah.
The Mavericks have enough players to play.
Yeah.
But all of the guys that they have are out are their top 6 rotation guys. And so now, like, tonight or today against the Bulls, we saw Tyrell Terry, Tyler Bay,
Josh Green and
if you're going to...
Trey Burke is starting.
The Bulls were a better team than the Mavericks today roster-wise.
Yeah.
So it's tough.
Okay, so back to my original question. Do you think that Kristaps should be playing differently while he is struggling?
He's a shooter. You can't ask me to have him not shoot the ball when he has a shot.
Yeah.
And he's got to shoot the ball.
And he's not a good post player, so I don't really want him playing in the post. Now, he likes the post, so, you know, whatever. It is what it is. But also, one of the reasons why he was called a unicorn is because he could shoot those threes.
I thought we saw one play one time in Milwaukee where it was a curl off at the elbow.
At the elbow, yeah.
And it was a wide open shot. And I was like, why? We should do that a little bit more for him. I know the mid-range game, you know, all the whatever. The fact is, that's his shot. Well, I get so annoyed with... I'm an analytics guy.
Yeah.
I love the advanced numbers, but I think you can't hinder yourself.
There's a balance.
You know? Yes.
Yeah.
Analysis can be paralysis. And sometimes I think the Mavs paralyze their offense a little bit. They take the only thing Porzingis is elite at is a mid-range jumper when he's open. And that sounds ridiculous, but that's not really that high. You know, not a lot of guys can do that.
Yeah.
So why can't we run a little bit more of him coming off a curl at the elbow with a pull-up jumper? Try it out, you know, let him get going a little bit. He's always shooting it 35 feet out.
Yeah, I that exact play was what I was going to think of. Because Kristaps is really mobile, but I think while he's struggling shooting, maybe use his mobility off the ball instead of forcing him to make a play with the ball. Well, I don't know.
He's not good making the play with the ball.
Yeah.
He's just not.
At least right now.
He hasn't been ever since we got him.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you watch highlights of New York, yeah, you're going to see a highlight of him doing that. But what about the 13 other times where he drove it and lost the ball? He loses the ball on his dribble.
It's weird. Maybe because he's so tall.
Well, in the ball, it takes 9 seconds from the ball to hit the ground and back up to his hand because he's a giant out there. So he, to me, is a catch and shoot guy. Now, can he be elite at that? Elite to the point where it helps you win a championship? I think maybe, but that's what he is.
Yeah, and I think, like you said, right now, it just, I don't know, I feel like we haven't seen enough to know anything. Mm-hmm. You know, that coming back from the torn ACL, I mean, everyone sucks that season. Then he got injured again. And maybe that is a sample size of these injuries that he's had. And that's another conversation of his injury problems. But, like, just for right now in this moment, he kind of sucks. And I understand why. It sucks that he sucks.
If you're the Mavs, you have to bring in another superstar.
At least for insurance.
You have to, because you can't rely on Porzingis. He hasn't shown you the ability for you to rely on him to help you carry the load into, you know, the finals.
And stay healthy.
Yeah. And so that's what I mean, you know, health-wise. Yeah. So I think this free agent class, I know Mavs suck at free agency, but they got to do something.
I would try more to do a trade.
Yeah, anything. You got to do something. You got to get somebody in here that can play.
Yeah, so, I mean, for me, overall, this past week, they've lost games, and all these guys are out, and it really sucks.
But it's hard to judge this team with all these guys out.
Yeah, because they have so many players out. And that's, right. I mean, the facts are like that. It is what it is. You can't get around it. It still sucks. But, yeah, I like the way that Luka's playing. I like his defense. He looks amazing. I just wish that it could translate into wins.
It's hard to win, you know, when you have a bunch of rookies out there, you know. Guys that weren't even drafted. Not just, you know, Josh Green was a first-round pick, but that's, you know, you had all these other guys were second-round picks and some of them undrafted.
Or like Trey Burke starting and he was not in the NBA a few months ago. Okay, so that's our good, the bad, and the ugly. Leave your comments or tweet us. Oh, I forgot to say we're on Twitter. I'm on Twitter @_SydneyMyers. Thank you for those comments.
You're welcome.
Okay, let's move on to the next topic. So we kind of touched on this a little bit. Can Luka actually win MVP? Obviously, he's been playing amazing. And, you know, again, I dug into this a lot more in the article on DallasHoopsCast.com. But I want to just debate it here. Like, he's putting up the numbers. He's close to averaging a triple-double. Is that actually enough? Like, do you think he could actually win MVP like this?
I think his numbers are not going to be what determine it. His numbers are going to be up there. I mean, he had the case. If Luka was a veteran, I mean, last year his numbers were MVP worthy.
Yeah.
So his numbers are going to be there. What's going to prevent him from winning MVP is the Mavs record.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really it. Unless they get things together, once they get all their players back and they can finish in the top three, at the least top four. But even if you're the fourth seed, it's hard to win MVP. So I think the only thing that would hold him back from winning MVP is the Mavericks record. And right now, it doesn't look like they're going to be a top four seed.
I mean, they're 6-6. If these guys are healthy, like you said, it could be different. But also, I mean, they dug, you know, kind of a deep hole. And with these injuries, it's hard to get out of it.
I don't want to talk about Carlisle's first part of the season. You know, because this is why I get so irritated with him in the first 10 games, experimenting with the season to get all this data. You sacrifice games. You start 2-4. Mm-hmm. Well, now you got the hardest schedule I've seen a team have in a long time, plus having all these guys out. They may come out of this out of the playoffs.
Yeah.
You know, now they might be able to fight themselves.
I mean, Brunson should be back, but
you know.
Well, and also I hate, you know, like, today, was Hardaway actually injured, or were they sitting him because they thought they could beat Chicago
without him.
Without Hardaway, yeah. Which was the same reason why they lost to Chicago the first time, was that they sat guys and I guess thought they could just beat them without them.
And this is what I'm talking about. These are you can't go 0-2 against the Chicago Bulls and expect to be a top four seed. Yeah. Like, these are the teams you have to feast on, and they're just not, because of how many guys they have out. And if Hardaway plays tomorrow, I will be upset.
Yeah.
Because if he wasn't actually hurt, I mean, come on, you're telling me a guy that's 28, 29 years old can't play back-to-back games?
I don't know. I mean, yeah, he could have played. Carlisle said that Brunson could have played because he tested negative for the right amount of days. He doesn't know why he wasn't allowed to play. I mean, if they had those guys, or at least just Hardaway, it's hard to say they don't win this game. I mean, I know the Bulls ended up winning by 16, but...
But if you had Brunson and Hardaway out there instead of Tyrell Terry and Josh Green, that's a huge upgrade. And, you know, Brunson went off for 31 against the Bulls last time, so maybe he keeps the hot hand going.
Or just Hardaway, helps. You know,
either way, it sucks, and watch him be there tomorrow, and... Like I said, I can't imagine Porzingis, I can almost guarantee, is going to be out.
Yeah.
I don't know what they're going to do with
Luka. I don't know, but
he played a lot of minutes tonight, and he looked exhausted at the end of the game.
Yeah, I agree. I think that Luka, well, and one thing I talked about in this article is that he's putting up MVP numbers. Mm-hmm. Like, that's undeniable. When you look at the historical averages overall, or for his position, or in the past decade, he's putting up MVP numbers, but the thing that might get him is their record. It might not be a good enough. And honestly, even if they had a top four or a top three seed, his age might be the other thing that gets to him. And I shared the data of his age group and why it's even harder for him to win MVP. Even if they had that kind of record, I don't even know if that would be good enough based on his age. You kind of have to have an even better record to win it at 22, which is what he would be. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know if it's going to happen this year. Obviously, he is going to be an MVP candidate probably every year for the next
12 years.
Yeah, 12 years. Yeah. But I don't think this is the year that he wins it.
Unless they go on some run and they finish in the top three in the West and he's averaging 29-9-9, he's just not going to win it.
And not that, like, I mean, they could do that. I'm not saying that this team sucks. I'm just saying, like, given where they're starting from right now... Yeah. I don't think they have that kind of team. And I think they're better than they were last year. I just don't think they're good enough for that.
It's not even their fault. The team is true. Fine. It's just they're out so they many guys. And they're out these guys during the toughest part of their schedule. It's just the way it is.
Yeah. Okay, so that's what we think. I want to know what you guys think in the comment section on YouTube, or you can tweet me. Do you think that Luka could actually win MVP this year? Let me know what you think about that. Okay, so let's move on now to this interview with Evan Zoucha from Premium Hoops. Really interesting interview of digging into what feel is in basketball. And we'll talk about why Luka is so good at it. And then stick around, because after that, we're going to do our game predictions for the week. I'm joined now by Evan Zoucha from Premium Hoops. Evan, welcome to the show, first of all.
Thanks for having me. Happy to be here.
Yeah, you wrote an article recently on your personal blog, actually, about the art and science of feel in basketball, which is usually one of those, like, intangibles that people talk about. He has good feel or good basketball IQ. But in this article, you actually tried to put it into a tangible idea, or actually a few tangible ideas. So just to start off with, how would you define feel based on your research that you did for this piece?
I guess at a high level, what I would describe feel as for basketball players is the sum of a player's pattern recognition, visual processing, especially with a focus on spatial recognition, and processing speed. And it's basically the ability to solve any number of basketball problems in a time-efficient manner.
Yeah, it's interesting to hear it, like, actually broken down into those three parts. And when you read it, it makes sense. Like, starting with pattern recognition, just being able to use what a player has seen or done in the past and use that information to now recognize, okay, this is happening, so this is the pattern that I should follow. But it was interesting, like, when you think about it, not every player can do that efficiently. How difficult is it to develop it or to even improve it?
it's kind of hard to say because I don't think the actual act of developing feel is really that complicated. I mean, at the end of the day, what you're doing is just playing basketball a lot and in a lot of different ways, a lot of different situations. Yeah. But really, the difficulty in developing feel, I think, comes from the time aspect. You know, it takes a long time for a player to aggregate those experiences and to build onto those heuristics in a way where the pattern recognition phase of playing basketball, you know, recognizing what's going on, what scheme you're playing, what pick and roll coverage the opposing team is playing, stuff like that, and just actioning those insights yourself. It takes a long time to build up that heuristic to something super useful. And so I think it's really important for players to really start making these decisions in, you know, kind of without thinking a lot of times as young as they possibly can.
Yeah, it was my next question was going to be, do you think age has something to do with it? Because some guys they identify basketball skills early on and they start that training compared to a guy that maybe just starts late in high school or in college, that time difference, he's able to see so many more patterns and therefore recognize so many more patterns and make the right decision.
Yeah, exactly. And a lot of the time there's maybe one player on the court who's making decisions, especially with ball in hand at any one time. And so a lot of the time that player gets decided on when they're young. You know, it's maybe the best guy on the team is the guy with ball in hand the most. Mm-hmm. And so other players a lot of times are making decisions that are a little different. You know, they're maybe not on ball reads or dribbling decisions, but they're when and where to cut, when to set a screen, what side to set a screen, when to split off your screen and roll, just even little things like that. But really the bulk of that development, I feel like, comes from making on ball decisions and really being forced to speed those decisions up too, so that you're making those decisions kind of subconsciously based off past experience. And if it doesn't work, you update the heuristic and you know that solution is probably not the best solution for that problem. And if it does work, that's something in the toolkit you can use for later.
I think a good example is, you know, since I'm a Mavs podcaster, obviously, Luka Doncic just having those skills of basketball IQ and having that feel. And you know, again, going back to the time being a factor, he had been around basketball since he was just a little kid, like 6 years old, and started training with a professional team at the age of 13. So you could see how that experience leads to having developed that feel over time. But taking that into consideration, do you think that it is just a time factor, or is it something just an innate talent that someone is born with?
A lot of it is time. I'm of the opinion that kind of the Western ideal that we can develop ourselves as much as we really want. But there is definitely a time component to that. But that said, like, it's really tough to answer that question, because if you look at players like Magic Johnson, Luka Doncic, LeBron James, like, yeah, they've had ball in hand from a young age. And especially in the case of Luka, he was training in a professional environment from when he was a kid, which slight tangent here. I love the way that the European professional basketball system works with academies and everything. And I'd love to see something like that in the NBA, because you can really start to build these skills at a young age. But it's really tough to say if it's innate or if it's developable, I guess, which definitely isn't a worm, but that's okay. and I think at the end of the day, it's like many things you see in psychology, biology, and neuroscience. You're both a product of your genetics and of your experience as you live your life. And so I think feel is somewhat the same, but I definitely do think it can be developed.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, if you were to just take it to other parts of basketball, some of the physical skills of, like, being tall, for example, you can't exactly teach that, but just because you're tall doesn't mean you're a good rebounder. So it's probably both kind of like that. Between the three, pattern recognition, visual processing, and processing speed, which I want to dig into more. Was there one that you found was harder, or one that was more important than the others?
I think the hardest one to develop is probably processing speed, just because you have to have these reads kind of ingrained in your subconscious in a way that you can just action that the second you get the ball without even thinking about it. Like, you just kind of recognize what's going on and bam, you're firing the pass off or you're taking the shot. You're beating a guy off the dribble the right way. You pick the right counters or whatever dribble moves you'd like. But I think the most critical one is probably the pattern recognition step, because if you're not aware of all the variables of the problem in the first place, it's going to be really hard to solve it no matter how quick you act.
That's true. Yeah, that makes sense. So digging into each one individually, I probably should have done this from the beginning, but how would you define starting with pattern recognition, what that means?
Yeah, so to me, pattern recognition is kind of the ability to observe everything that's going on in the problem. So it's not perfect, and you might have seen this. I know they use this as an example in a lot of kind of like how to start watching film, instructional tutorial type things. But there's a psychology example where there's an experiment done, 20, 30 years ago maybe. And basically what's happening is there's like six to eight people on the court, and they're all just passing the ball around. And without being told, somebody who's dressed in a gorilla costume comes.
Oh, yeah, I've seen it.
So for anyone who any of the listeners who haven't seen this video, it's great. And so you, the viewer of this video, you're watching all these people pass the ball around, and this gorilla walks across the screen. And most people who watch the video don't see the gorilla the first time. And I think that's a good example of kind of how difficult it is to really keep your eye on nine other players in the ball at once, especially, you know, at the NBA speed, because the game is breakneck fast at the NBA level. So pattern recognition to me is trying your best and doing what you can to observe all those variables in the problem. And then once you observe those variables, you know, you've recognized the pattern and you can kind of apply a solution that you've tried in the past. And that's kind of where the experience bit comes in.
Yeah, I was just going to say that same thing about a lot of times it's called decision-making, of making the right decision in the right moment. But if you take it a step back from that, in order to make the right decision, you first have to recognize what's actually going on. What about it tying in with that visual processing of processing what's going on in the moment?
Yes, I felt the organization and kind of the order in which I addressed these three subgenres of feel was important. And I tried my best to organize them in a way that they built off the previous one. And so visual processing is the second bit of this heuristic, I guess, or this way of thinking that I described. And I did that because visual processing is basically how your body is collecting and moving all this information along. So without getting too into the weeds of the biology, you're seeing something with your eyes. That visual information is being coded into electrochemical signals that the brain can actually interpret. And then once you've visually seen kind of what's going on, you've gathered all the information that you need. But it's important that this visual processing step is constantly ongoing, because nothing in basketball is static. You know, the other nine players on the court aren't standing around. The ball is not going to stay in the same place. And so the visual processing is hugely integral to the process, because you're constantly updating the information that you're gathering.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think a lot of times it's like the intangible trait of instinct. It almost seems like a player knows what's going to happen before it happens, when in reality, his brain is just able to process what he's seeing better than perhaps another player. So the third piece of it, of feel, is processing speed, which I think is actually really closely tied to what we were talking about, visual processing. How would you define that?
Yeah, so once you've kind of assessed all the variables in the problem, you're perceiving what's going on around you, and you're constantly updating all those variables in the problem, processing speed is the speed at which that all of that processing is going on, which I've just defined it with its own words, so I'm going to do a better job of that. it's the rate at which your brain is encoding that information from the exterior stimuli and processing that information. So not only is it you aggregating all this information and the speed at which you do that, but it's also the speed at which your brain tells your limbs kind of what to do as an action, as a response to what you've seen.
And you had a good example of how this can be developed with the Ball family, the Ball brothers, Lonzo and LaMelo. What do you think helped them in their training to be potentially successful in the NBA?
Yeah, so this is my favorite part of this topic. And I will fully admit, this is something that I'm definitely working more on learning about. But I think one of the big things that enabled the Ball brothers to become such high feel or high IQ players is that the speed at which they played pretty closely mimicked an NBA pace, especially for a high school team. You know, maybe they get scored on, but they're inbounding right away, and maybe they're even chucking the ball up full court, really trying to put pressure on the defense. And so when you get into a situation where you're making these decisions so quickly all the time, you're playing at this crazy pace, and everybody on the team is a willing passer, that's like the perfect environment to me to kind of develop these skills, especially when you're at that young age, high school, because, you know, you kind of get a step ahead of everybody else, really. A lot of teams, you know, a lot of players might not even see the pace tick up that way until the NBA, you know, especially if you play for a school like Virginia or Syracuse. Mm. You know, the pace in college is not always what we'd like it to be as scouts of NBA prospects.
Yeah, this made me think of exactly that, the difference between the college game and the NBA game, which is, I think, recognized by most people in terms of just the style and how that can affect a player. But I think this shows, like, even deeper than that, it doesn't just affect the way he plays or maybe what he knows how to do or not do, but it can affect this really integral skill of having basketball feel. And I think also you could take that into the difference between the EuroLeague and the NBA. And we're seeing a lot of EuroLeague players or European players blossom in the NBA now. And it could be because the style they play there, it helps them to develop these intangible skills that they really need in the NBA.
Yeah, and the professional European game is just so much better as a facsimile of the NBA game than college is in a lot of ways. Like, you know, college, they play gimmicky defenses like zone, mm-hmm. or like the pack line at Virginia. And you're not really going to see a whole lot of that in the NBA. So yes, those experiences are definitely valuable because, you know, any experience you have, especially if it's directly related to the sport you're trying to get better at, it's going to be helpful, but it's less directly applicable to the NBA game. Whereas players in Europe who grow up in the academy system, not only are they starting from a young age, but they're playing a professional game. You know, they're in the weight room with real professional trainers, which, you know, in the NBA, or rather in America, unless you're the best of the best when you're going into high school, you might not have the benefits of a professional training staff, you know, a dietary staff, coaches, mm-hmm. who have worked in or around the pro game or even just college. And so the playing field, yeah, it takes a high degree of skill to get to a professional contract in Europe, obviously. But if you, mm-hmm. can do so, especially at a young age, I mean, that's just, it's a great thing to have as a prospect. So I would really like to see America kind of move towards professional academies or even just like semi-professional youth academies. Just get these guys some experience and give them a developmental context that's actually helpful for them and not just kind of the old adage of high school coaches wanting to win now.
What do you think about the G League? It's, I think, it's become an option where a player, instead of going to college for a year, he could go to the G League. Do you think that would help him to get these kinds of experiences that could develop feel and basketball IQ?
Yeah, it just gives players another avenue, and it's a paid avenue, which I love. But it gives them another option for where to kind of develop their craft. And I would so much rather a guy take a chance with like the G League Ignite program or even just like a smaller team overseas than go to a college program where the coach wants to win, so he isn't really intent on developing his players. Especially blue bloods are really, really guilty of this, I think. I would much rather see a guy go to a context that's good for his development and not as good for his profile than to go to a big school like a Duke or a Kentucky, as we've seen prospects go this year, and just kind of have themselves like in their development not be a central focus, which I totally understand. These coaches have to win games so they can continue, you know, making money and getting their contracts and stuff like that. And the competition is good too. I mean, you don't want an environment where, every player is just in it to get better, but the wins and losses don't matter because the competitive environment really makes everybody do their best. So I think there's a balance to strike, and the G League is a really good balance. Now, I will say it would be great to see some G League Ignite film so I could really feel more comfortable with kind of how the game is being played and the opportunities these guys are being given. But from the stats I've seen and what I've heard from kind of closer to the G League, it does seem like it's a beneficial pathway, and I'm glad that the NBA is investing in it.
What do you think happens when a player seemingly never develops this? As a Mavericks fan, I think about a player like Dennis Smith Jr., who had a lot of physical talents and and real skills. I mean, he wasn't a terrible shooter. He was athletic. He could play the game of basketball, but he seemed to lack feel compared to Luka, who clearly just had it from the beginning. When players, you know, go their whole career without developing it, is that part of training, or do you think there's something going on there? Again, going back to maybe it being an innate talent, what do you think happens there?
Yeah, I think it's a little of both, which is a little bit of a cop out, but it kind of depends how long it takes for it to click for guys. You know what I mean? Like, so the classic phrase that we hear is that the game slows down a couple years into your professional career. Mm-hmm. And then I don't think that the rate at which that happens is the same for every player. So Dennis Smith Jr. is a really good example. Maybe if you continue giving him on ball reps, he could pick up, you know, better and more efficient decision-making skills. But, you know, he's getting paid to win games right now. He's a professional basketball player. So it may not be in the team's best interest to give him the reps he needs to feel that out. Whereas if you're another good example I like to think of as someone who watches way too many Bulls games for my own good is Zach LaVine. And so Zach was always wired as a scorer. And he was just so athletically gifted. Even at UCLA, he didn't really need to find the right answer to the problem because he could brute force with pure talent. And we're finally starting to see kind of the benefits of him being given so many on-ball reps. I think his passing has really improved. I actually highlighted his improvements in reading the game and making good decisions in an article that came out today for Premium Hoops. And so I think, and Jaylen Brown's another really good example of a guy who's improved, but you have to meet the threshold where you're good enough to get playing time and good enough to get on-ball reps where you can explore that studio space while still having the capacity to improve that level of feel. And I think Dennis Smith Jr. is a really good example of a player who, if he's not scoring, he's not bringing that much else to the team. Maybe if he was a really good defender, like Frankie Smokes in New York, who is still getting reps, you got to have something, some skill that keeps you on the court so you can feel out the rest and improve your game more holistically. So it definitely depends on the player, but if you have an NBA level skill you can hang your hat on, you're going to get a chance to stay on the court and really come along in that capacity.
Yeah, you know, that makes me think of one of the things that I liked so much after reading the article is that, you know, I think people don't realize that we do actually understand the tangible parts of feel and basketball IQ, even without realizing it. You know, talking about things like the game slows down for him or making the right decision or a lot of these things that we say that are real things that can be developed, that visual processing, that pattern recognition, it just seems like such a lofty thing that we could never quantify. And yet a lot of times it's kind of second nature to us. We just don't realize it.
I think it's a great point because really the goal of this article was to pull the cover off the black box. You know what I mean? So like the black box is a classic. You put the inputs in, something happens in there. You don't really need to know what it is. And then you get an output. And I think, like you said, we all touch on and use these kinds of, I guess, colloquialisms really to describe basketball IQ and feel and how the game slows down. But what I really wanted to do is just kind of make that tangible and understandable and describe a little bit of the science behind it.
So my last question, I guess, would be, you know, all of this being said and how we can kind of make it a tangible idea now, why do you think it is so rare for players to have this feel?
I think that development is still at a place where this just isn't being emphasized as much. And I think scouting is finally coming around to players, like just draft players who are good at basketball and don't draft a guy who's like a freak athlete, but can't play the game of basketball. I think training is the next one to come around and kind of taking pride in every player in your program, being able to make decisions at a high level is going to be really important for the game going forward, I think. And that's kind of what I hope to get from discussions with coaches and stuff like that. I'd love to inform coaches. Like, I want to hear what they're doing in practice, and I want to consult and help them improve those drills, those scrimmage type things they play in a way that helps players become their best selves. And so I think it's a little rare just because basketball is still a pretty young sport and we're still learning a lot about it. we're still tracking box score stats in like the most simplistic way. Like we still haven't added hockey assists, for example. So, and that's really something I love about the game of basketball. There's always another layer deeper that you can go. There's always something new you can learn. And if you ever feel like you know it all, you're missing something.
I like that. That's kind of just true in life, I think. Evan, thank you so much for being on. I want to make sure I give you the chance to tell people where they can find you on the internet, where they can read your stuff and listen to you.
Yeah, I do most of my talking on the Bird app. You can find me on Twitter at @easy_hoops. You can find my writing, this piece, the neuro piece, you can find on my blog, easyhoops.co. And most of my other writing you can find on Premium Hoops, premiumhoops.org, and or at @premiumhoopsNBA.
Okay, awesome. And again, yeah, this article is, I mean, we barely scratched the surface of everything that's in here. It's very detailed and just extremely interesting. So make sure that you check it out, everyone listening, again on easyhoops.com. Evan, thanks for being on. I really enjoyed it.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, let's finish up with game predictions for the week. They have coming up tomorrow or Monday, depending on when you're listening to this, the Toronto Raptors, and then they play the Pacers on Wednesday, the Spurs on Friday, and then a back-to-back on Saturday, they play the Rockets. So that schedule looks a little different from when it did to start the year because the Rockets now have Victor Oladipo, who used to play for the Pacers. They no longer have him. And then also, all of these players are out, and we didn't predict that at all.
And so, Indiana doesn't have Victor Oladipo.
Yeah. So, Toronto Pacers, or Raptors, Pacers, Spurs, Rockets. What you got?
I would say, I mean, it really depends on when these players are going to come back for the Mavericks. The Spurs and the Rockets aren't, even before the Harden trade, the Rockets weren't the same team that they were the last couple of years. San Antonio is not the same team that they've been the last 25 years. And Indiana without Victor Oladipo. So yeah. It's not as hard as originally thought, but none of that matters if the Mavericks don't have their players
exactly.
back.
Exactly, yeah.
So, you know, they could go 0-4 because they have six guys out or five guys out. Or they could go 4-0 if they get their guys back. So that's really all it depends is their roster.
Yeah, Toronto has really struggled this season.
I think they've won back-to-back games, though. Now, don't quote me on that.
Yeah, I mean,
this is recorded,
they've won a few more games, yeah. But they've struggled for the season before this. The Pacers, again, they're without Oladipo since they traded him. And the player they got back, Caris LeVert, he's out as well. So they're a much different team. The Spurs, like you said, They're okay.
They're 6-6 with like the Mavericks, but yeah. If both teams are fully healthy, the Mavs are a better team.
True, yeah. And then the Rockets, I don't know what they're going to be like with Oladipo. So I think, like you said, they
and John Wall's been out too.
Yeah, true. So. I think if the Mavericks get their guys back, we know they're already going to have Hardaway and Brunson back. If they can get everyone else back, they could go 3-1 on this. But again, depending on those guys being out.
Fully healthy, they're better than all four of these teams.
They're 4-0, probably. Yeah, yeah.
They're just better. Yeah. And they may lose one
I'm
because...
I'm adding an element of unpredictability.
And that's all
that's
it is.
That's why I say 3-1. Yeah, but if all those guys are out, I still think they can go 2-2.
2-2 would be a huge win.
Yeah, they're going to get Hardaway and Brunson back. We already know that. So
we're assuming Hardaway's not actually hurt.
Yeah, true. So I think they could go 2-2 if they're not completely healthy. If they are, I'll say 3-1.
I would say tomorrow, if Luka plays, then they have a shot at winning.
Yeah.
But if Luke is out,
then
You know, you don't want to play a 21-year-old on back-to-back
too
nights.
Much.
Yeah.
He might get tired.
Yeah. Yeah. So we'll see.
Yeah. I was going to say something else. Oh, yeah. And this is also assuming that none of these games get postponed.
So. Hey, that wouldn't be the worst thing for the Mavs right now.
Exactly. Okay. Those are our predictions. Share yours in the comments. Thank you guys so much for listening. We really appreciate it. Again, if you're on Apple Podcasts, a review would be so much appreciated. Also, so we know...
A good review.
Yeah. Well, so we know what you like about the show so we can keep doing more of it. And I think that's pretty much it. Is there anything else you would like to add, Mr. Voice of the People, Martin? No? Okay, good.
I have a lot brewing in my brain.
Oh, okay. We'll save it for your post-game show. By the way, guys, subscribe. We have a new, or Martin has a new show, Dallas Hoops Gamecast. That's a separate stream. It's not on this one. Dallas Hoops Gamecast on all of the podcast streaming platforms. He does a post-game show after every game.
I just want to say I've listened. I've heard what you guys have been saying. and I've cut Sydney out of my post-game show. So you will not have to worry about her.
I'm the talent around here. I'm just kidding. Everyone likes you. No one likes me.
Yeah, that's why everybody invites me on their podcast as
your
a guest.
Face. Your and face. Not you. Thanks, guys, for listening. We'll see you in the next episode.
They never invite me.
Bye.